Okay. We are going to start a subject today, which is really sort of the last piece of our study of Perek Yud-Chet, in the beginning of Perek Yud-Tet. We spent a lot of time talking about various relationships between David and Shaul, David and Yonatan, David and Bnei Yehuda and Yisrael. The last piece of this perek is the introduction of the relationship between David and Michal. And I say introduction because that's a subject that really carries us through a good part of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, the beginning of Shmuel Bet. So we're going to begin this conversation today. We're not going to finish it. It's really an ongoing issue that we need to look at several times as the subject of David and Michal's relationship comes up at various times and in various prakim. But the centerpiece of the conversation starts here. So I want to go back, what will probably be our last time, and read the last part of Perek Yud Chet. And this time with a focus on the relationship between David and Michal. We also talked about the relationship between Michal and Shaul, and between, or Shaul and Michal, Shaul and Yonatan. This whole perek identifies various pieces of relationships that play out over the course of the chapters to come. But specific with regards to Michal, there's a number of issues which we began to look at, we began to hear last week, and it's important to identify them directly. So we're going to start with Pasuk Yud Chet. Or Yud Zayin, let's say. And this is the same piece that we read last week. Vayomer Shaul al David, Inei biti hagdola mirav, ota aten lecha liisha. Shaul begins by offering David his daughter Merav, the older daughter. Achayeli levenchai vilachem milchamot Hashem. But he stipulates that in order to do so, he has to go and fight various wars. That's the piece we looked at last week, that Shaul's intention here is to catch David, to put David in such a jeopardy that he'll get killed by the Plishtim and solve Shaul's problem for him. But David throws a monkey wrench into that plan. Pasuk Yud-Chet, Vayomer David el Shaul, Mi anochi umi chayai umishpachat avi b'Yisrael, ki echatan lamelech? Who am I that I should, and who is my family that I should be the son-in-law of the king? Meaning that David throws a monkey wrench into it because he turns the offer down. Vayi ve'etet et merav bat Shaul David, v'hi nitna la'adriel amacholati li'isha. So when instead of giving Merav to David, he ends up giving her to somebody else, Adriela Mocholati Lisha, Shaul will play the same game, if you will, with Michal as well. After Michal and David get married or engaged in our parak, at some point after David runs away, Shaul takes the remarkable step of, after David takes another wife, of giving Michal to another individual altogether by the name of Palti ben Laish. I'm just looking for that pasuk quickly. I'm not sure I'm going to find it so quickly. Yeah, if you take a look at Perek Chaf Hei, the end of Perek Chaf Hei, it's a complicated piece, but it's part of David's journey. He's running away, he's building his little army, and there's a story there with Naval and Avigail. We'll talk about that at length, but in the meantime, the end of that Perek lists various wives that David takes for himself. Avigail is one of them. But pasuk membet v'tamehev v'takom Avigail v'tirkav alachamov v'chamesh na'arotel alachot alachot l'ragla v'telech achrei malachei David v'tihilo liisha. So David marries Avigail, and at the same time, Bet Achinoam lakach David miYisrael v'tiyena gam shtehem lo l'nashim. Allowed to marry, well, polygamy was allowed in those days. You're allowed to have more than one wife. So in addition to Avigail, David takes Achinoam. But the end of this parak says, "V'Shaul Natan et Michal Bito Eshet David lefalti ben Laish Hashem migalim." Almost as a kind of revenge against the fact that he must have heard that David took additional wives. Remember, David is still married to Michal, even though Michal helped him escape, but there's still some relationship between them. And when Shaul heard that David had taken additional wives, so Michal is still in his house, Shaul gave Michal to Palti ben Laish as a wife. There's all discussions to what the status of his marriage, of her marriage, was to David at that point in time. We'll come back and discuss that at length. But for now, this is seems to be a modus operandi for Shaul. It's a kind of a way of getting at David. When David turns down Merav, he offers her to somebody else. When David runs away from Michal, he will offer Michal to somebody else as well.
So they were divorced?
We'll get to that issue. We'll get it. In Merav's case, it's not an issue. He never married her.
Right.
In Michal's case, it's more complicated. And we'll talk about that. It's really a relevant subject for Parak Chaf Hei. For now, I just wanted to show you it from Shaul's perspective.
Do we know anything more about Palti?
Not a lot. Yes, there's more, but for now, that's all we need to know. David eventually gets Michal back from Palti ben Laish. There's a whole discussion about what happens there. It's the beginning of Shmuel Bet. There's
so
pieces of this.
We won't be getting to that anyway.
not for a little while, but we're getting there. We're getting there. All right. Pasuk Chaf.
We're going back.
So the story of Merav is done. Right? Merav is given to Adriel Amocholati, and David moves on. Vateahav Michal bat Shaul et David. And here we begin the relationship between Michal and David. A relationship which begins with the description of a emotional attachment. Vate'ahav Michal bat Shaul et David. She loved David. Ve'agidu l'Shaul ve'yishar davar beinav. Shaul was very pleased. Why? So this was part of what we talked about last week. And Shaul has another opportunity to
get rid of
David. Where it didn't quite work with Merav, maybe it'll work with Michal. So he makes the stipulation, that was the phrase we spent about some time talking about last week. What the stumbling block is, Shaul sees it in both in Michal and the opportunity to use Michal to get to David, as well as the opportunity to again send him into battle. V'yomer Shaul David, b'shtayim titchaten b'ayom. Either with the second daughter or with two conditions, you will marry the second one today. David needs a little bit of convincing, because of course he already said he did not want to become the king's son-in-law. So Shaul sends the servants to go soften David and convince him to accept. You think it's such a big thing, such an easy thing to become the king's son? I have no money, I'm poor, I have no dowry. So Egidu Avdei Shaul Lemor Kadvarim Eile Diber David. Avdei Shaul went back and said, such and such is what David said. He's willing to marry your daughter, but he just doesn't have the dowry to do it. Vayomer Shaul, kotam lula David, ein chayfetz lamelech b'mahar, ki b'me'a orlot plishtim, inakem b'oveh melech. I don't know. I don't want money. I want proof of 100 dead Philistines. And I want the proof that cuts to the essence of the cultural divide between our two societies. Bring me 100 oilot. That was it. Shaul was convinced he had David now. So this, there was no escape. So David said, no, you know what? It's a good thing to be the king's son-in-law. And therefore, I'm going to do this. Days had not passed, meaning the... We'll talk about this phrase in a moment. Vayakam David vayelachu v'anasha vayach paplishtim atayim ish. So David went, killed 200 Philistines, he brought their orlot, brought them to Shaul, and with them he paid his commitment, he gave them to the king, for the purpose of marrying into the king's family, litchaten b'melech. So, vayiten lo Shaul et michal bito leisha. All the bells and whistles, they had a big marriage. David and Michal are now married, or at least engaged. Vayar Shaul, vayeda ki Hashem im David, u'michal bat Shaul ahevatu. David, Shaul saw that David had God's divine providence and protection. Michal loved him. So whereas Michal ahavatu, Michal loved him, Shaul saw him as a oyev. And a few times we pointed out that there's a play on the words ahav and oyev. In the classic example in Tanakh of Lashon Nofela Lashon, the play of words, the alliteration, the play with letters. The parak starts with Ahava, ends with Ahava. Yonatan loved David. Michal, Ahivatu, Shaul saw him as an Oyev. Vaitzu Sarif Lishtim Vaihi Mitzei Midei Tzeitam Sachal David Mikol Avdei Shaul Vayika Shmo Mod. David was getting more and more famous, more and more significant. The relationship between David and Michal doesn't last. Unfortunately, is a tragic example of a Romeo and Juliet romance. It doesn't last very long before David is forced to flee. Beginning of Perek Yetet, we read last week as well, where Shaul tries to kill David for the second time, and this time it's much more overt, and he has no option, no choice, but to run. Jump to Perek Yetet, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayishlach Shaul Malachim el Beit David lishomro ulahamito baboker. After the attempt to kill him with the spear, David runs home. Shaul sends messengers saying, "Go and kill him. Wait till the morning and kill him." Vatagid le David Michal ishto lemor. To which Michal, his wife, turns to him and says to him, as much as she loves him, she has to let him go. If you don't run tonight, by the morning, you're a dead man. So she devises a plot. She saves his life. She lets him out the window. David runs. This is the beginning of the flight of David, which will last all the way through until the death of Shaul. Vatikach Michal et hatrafim vatasa elamita. She then took the trafim. We're going to talk about what these trafim are in a moment, and placed them in the bed, disguising the bed as if David is still there. Vet kvir ha'izim sama mirashatav. Kvir ha'izim is a difficult phrase because it appears only one place in all of Tanakh, so phrases that only appear once are hard to define. The typical understanding is that she took some kind of net or mesh made out of goat's hair, and she used it to disguise the trefim. Remember, the trefim is some sort of a... what the trefim are is also machloket, but the classic understanding of this story is that she took the trefim that looked like a person, that sort of a little statue of an individual, and she put it into the bed and covered it with the sheet, the techas babaged. So because she covered it, you couldn't tell that it was an idol or a body, and not a person, but it needed hair. So hair, she disguised it with this kind of net of goat's hair. It's one interpretation. There are other suggestions as well. If we have time, we'll come back to it. So she uses the trefim and the izim to disguise David as if, or to disguise the fact that David was gone, as if to say he's still there, but inaccessible. Vayishlach Shaul melechim lekachat et David. Shaul sends his messengers to take David. Vatomer cholehu. She says, no, he is sick, can't be touched. So Shaul is not worried. Vayishlach Shaul et melechim leot et David lemor. Ha'alu oto b'mita elay la'mito. He's sick in bed. What do I care if he's sick? He's going to be killed. I care if he's sick. I'll kill him sick. He can't walk to me, so bring the bed to me. I'll kill him in bed. I sent you to kill him. I didn't send you to be mevakacholim. Halu oto b'mitay la'ilamito. So bring him in his bed. At that point, v'hevo ha'malachim b'inei ha'trafim alamito k'virezi mirashotav. Oh, they opened it. They pulled back the sheet, and there is this trafim, and the hair net is the of Kvirizim, and they realized that she had helped him escape. Confronted, therefore, by Shaul, Vayomer Shaul Michal, Lama kachad imitini? Why did you cheat me? Why did you lie to me? He wants to kill her husband, and he's worried about the fact that she lied to him. You sent my enemy to escape. On the contrary, he asked me to let him go. So I let him go. Why should I hold him back? Why should I? And at that point, the story shifts to David's flight with David Barach. The relationship between David and Michal is the subject that I wanted to look at today. It's a complicated one. It starts as sort of this classic romance. She loves him. And because she loves him, she wants to marry him. And Shaul agrees. He doesn't have any money. He's a poor man. So he goes out and he does the only thing that he knows how to do, which is to be a warrior and to kill Philistines and to essentially buy her hand in marriage with a payment other than money. And twice it tells us that she loved him, but Pasuk Chaf, but Ahav Michal bat Shaul et David, and again in Pasuk Chaf Chet, Michal bat Shaul Ahevatu. In both cases, it's in contrast to Shaul, but to Chi or to Merab, she loved David.
How come it never says he loved her?
That is a very powerful question. I'm going to hold that question until the end of the parak, until the end of the shiur today. That is a very astute question.
I'm glad.
But yes, it certainly is something that should be there and is missing. But the relationship between them is complicated, and whereas this marriage doesn't have the opportunity to grow much at that moment, because that night he's forced to flee. And then, of course, there's the story that I showed you, which is the Shaul's attempt to reboot this relationship by offering her up to Palti ben Laish. David gets her back at the beginning of Shmuel Bet. I'm going to skip that piece of the story, and we're going to skip to the end of the story of David and Michal. which is Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. Shmuel Bet Perek Vav.
Are we at the beginning of Vav?
No, we're sort of towards the end of Vav. Perek Vav, we just read, is the Haftarah Parshat Shmini. It's the story of David's attempt to bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim after Shaul's death, after the unification of the kingdom. After David is now ruling in Yerushalayim, he's ready to build the Beit HaMikdash. In his mind, Perek Zion is his request to build the Beit HaMikdash. But the Aron has been sitting in hiding. The Aron has been sitting in a tent, really, in Kiryat Yarim, since the fall of the Mishkan in Shiloh, beginning of Shmuel Aleph and Perek Dalet, or Perek Hey, since the Aron came back from its capture by the Plishtim. So David attempts to move the Aron to Yerushalayim. It's an attempt that is, it's a day that is marred by the tragedy of the death of Uzzah. And after the Aron is set aside for a couple of months, till sort of that tragedy settles down, again, a second attempt to bring the Aron, this one successful, starting with Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayhi ki tzadu nosei Aron Hashem shisha tzadim ha'izbach shor mari. They're bringing the Aron now with great pomp and ceremony, sacrifices and offerings. V'David micharker b'chol oz lifnei Hashem. David is dancing with all of his might before God. V'David chagur efod bad, and he's wearing a special garment, like a kohen garment, an efod. V'David v'chol beit yisro ma'alim et aron Hashem b'teruah v'kol shofar. They are bringing the aron with great fanfare, with sounds of the shofar. V'haya aron Hashem ba'ir David, as the aron would come to ir David. U'michal bat Shaul nishkafa ba'ad achalon. It's fascinating to me to watch how Michal is identified. Michal is either identified as Bat Shaul or Eshet David. And she's referred to different places in different ways. You kind of have to play through which phrase is used when. But here it's Michal Bat Shaul. Nishkafa Ba'ad HaChalon, she's watching. V'teret HaMelech David mefazez u'mefachaker lifnei Hashem. She sees David dancing and kicking and jumping before God. Vativez lo biliba. And she despises him. She's disgusted by it. She's embarrassed by it. So it's fascinating to watch the relationship, the emotional description of the relationship deteriorate from vatehav to vativez. Yeah, it's a very powerful drop.
Does Michal Bat Shaul or Michal Eshet David have anything to do with the relationship at the time?
Or the circumstances at the time. What aspect of Michal is being expressed here? In other words, part of what's driving, and David will say it, part of what's driving Michal's concern for at this time is her vision of what a melech should be. But her vision of what a melech should be is
not dancing,
is Shaul, her father. That's her vision of a king. V'yaviu et aron Hashem v'yatzigu eto b'mkomo b'toch ha'ol shenatan lo David v'yal David olot lifnei Hashem u'shlamim. It's a whole ceremony. They bring lots of offerings. They bring the aron. David blesses the people, gives them portions, gives them offerings. When David finished blessing everybody, comes home. Atetze Michal Bat Shaul likrat David. Michal Bat Shaul comes out to greet him. Vatomer, manich bad hayom melech Yisrael shenigla hayom le'enei amahot avadav gigalot niglot achad harekim. What kind of a day is this that the king of Israel should be dancing in an undignified manner before the maidens of the land? Like you're a street performer or a rake, a nothing, a nobody, as if you're a commoner. What do you think you are? You're the king of Israel. You're not a commoner. It's undignified. It's not nice. Vayomer David al Michal lifnei Hashem asher bachar bi me'avich mikol beito letzavot oti nagid al am Hashem al Yisrael v'sichakti lifnei Hashem. David says to Michal, before God, and an oath, God who chose me instead in lieu of your father, Michal bat Shaul, and commanded me to be the leader of his people, of God's people of Israel. And before him I rejoice today. Unekaloti od mizot ve'iti shafal be'inai. Would that I would be little in my own eyes. I'm nothing. I'm serving God. I'm dancing before God. I should be worried about my dignity before the maidens? That's the end of the conversation. Michal had her say. David had his say. And the end of the story is a postscript to the relationship between David and Michal. Ulemichal bat Shaul lo haya la yeled ad yom mota. Michal never had a child. Meaning that from that point forward, essentially, she loses the status that she had as David's primary wife, mother of what would be the heir to the throne. And that's going to throw David's kingdom into a tailspin, because at this point there is no heir to the throne once Michal is rejected. So from the moment David enters into the kingdom, Michal was his ticket to the throne in a peaceful manner. Michal was his ticket to a peaceful ascension to the throne in the aftermath of Shaul. Everything has deteriorated because of Shaul's hatred of David and his fear of David, but that has now spinned off into a deterioration of the relationship between David and Michal. And so what starts as one of the great romances of Tanakh ends in a tragedy. And there's two pieces to this story that I wanted to look at today. One is the dynamic of David and Michal and their relationship themselves, and that we'll come back to at the end. And the other is the very striking parallel that the Navi tries to present to us in our parak, meaning Parak Yechet, between the relationship between between David and Michal, and the parallel relationship between Yaakov and Rachel. And the Yaakov Rachel Leah story is hovering over this parak as a kind of a reminder. And we've talked about this a number of times, that there are many places in Tanakh where stories will unfold in parallel to other stories. Either a parallel in language or a parallel in theme, events, and structure. We saw that when we looked at David being conflict with his brothers in the field of the Battle of Goliath, and we compared it to the relationship between Yosef and his brothers. And more often than not, I think I'm still waiting for the exception. I keep saying more often than not because I'm sure there's an exception somewhere, but more almost without exception, biblical parallels are there to highlight differences. You take two stories and you identify 7, 8, 9, 10 different parallels between them, and then suddenly you realize how disparate and how different they are by their conclusion or by one particular piece which highlights their distinction.
It was sort of like a hint to me when she covered that the trefim with that hair.
Right.
Which is exactly what happened.
So that's
Yaakov's story.
Right. So that's actually an interesting piece because it's a parallel but to a different part of the story, right? It's a parallel to the Yaakov Esav piece with the hair, the goat, the hair on the hands versus the hair on the head. Right? There's a disguising of somebody using a goat in order to present a different reality. That's true, but there's a much more striking parallel. Think about the dynamic of the relationship between David and Shaul. Who is Shaul to David? Who is Shaul to David on a relational basis?
Father-in-law.
Either father-in-law or potential father-in-law. Right? He's either the father-in-law or the potential father-in-law. David is the son-in-law or the potential son-in-law. How many wives, how many daughters does Shaul have that are of marriageable conversation with David?
Two. Oh, and the other one has two of them.
Okay. And if we now, if we jump to Yaakov and Lavan, okay, the father-in-law or potential father-in-law is Lavan, he also has two daughters. One he, Yaakov wants to marry, the other he doesn't. And in the end, there's also a game being played as to which one will end up marrying the son-in-law. And there's a switch. Right? There's a switch of marriage, whereas Yaakov was supposed to be marrying Rachel, ended up that Lavan switched it and gave him Leah. Shaul also pulled a switch, although it's a little bit of a different switch. In this case, it's a switch where he was supposed to marry Merav, and he gave Merav to somebody else. And now he's left with marrying Michal being the younger one over Merav, who's the older one, Rachel being the younger one over Leah, who's the older one. And there's pieces of the story that play out in a way that says, okay, is there more here than just a superficial coincidental parallel? So I made a chart, and that's what I'm going to share with you today. We'll pass those down.
You made one sentence about the fact that Michal was following, you know, the footsteps sort of her father. Do we ever take into consideration that he wasn't that Shaul wasn't exactly the nicest guy? He's trying to kill somebody, and he's trying to, you know, do things that really aren't quite lovely.
I think that's what David said to her. He says, "Your perspective of the kingdom comes from Shaul. God rejected Shaul and chose me. If you want to side with Shaul, your father, so be it. But at this point in my life, it's either me or him." I mean, that is playing very much in David's mind when he has enough of Shaul comparing him, of Michal comparing him to Shaul. Shaul is not, in his mind, the role model or prototype of what a melech b'Yisrael should be. And I think that that's her own undoing. But that's a jumping ahead to the story. So what I've done here is I've given you a page filled with what I think are some very powerful parallels between the Yaakov Rachel story, which is the second column, and the David Michal story, which is the third column. We could do this in text in Tanakh, but I'll just show you a couple of them, and I've listed on the side a kind of a summary of what these parallels represent. So first, the obvious one. Okay? Both of these stories deal with father-in-law, son-in-law, and two daughters, potential wives in the story. And so there's an immediate schematic parallel that just jumps off the page. In both cases, there is an obligation that the father-in-law takes upon himself to offer his daughter or to give his daughter hand in marriage. Lavan commits to Yaakov, "Work for 7 years, and I will let you marry my daughter, Rachel." Rachel bitraktana, right? Yaakov specifies which one. Right? Rachel is the younger daughter. And Shaul had committed already from the Battle of Goliath to offer his daughter's hand to the victor, in which case this would have been Merav. And in both cases, at the last minute, Shaul, or the father-in-law, reneges, changes course, changes direction. Lavan, in his case, who offers Leah instead of Rachel. Shaul, in his case, who switches out Merav for Michal by offering Merav to somebody else, although David had a hand in that there particularly, but nonetheless, the result is the same. So that's the first row. Then it gets more interesting. How many years did Yaakov commit to work in order to marry Rachel?
Seven.
In the end, he had to work for another 7 years in order to marry Rachel after he was married to Leah, which means that he had committed to a certain payment, and then in order to marry his choice wife, he ended up having to double that payment. What was the payment offer that Shaul stipulated for the marriage of David to Michal?
200 or lot.
He said so in Pasuk Chafev, giving you the Psukim, Vayomer Shaul Kol Tamar David, Ein Chevetz HaMelech B'mo, Ki B'me'a or lot Plishtim Linakem B'yavei HaMelech. How many did David pay?
200.
He doubled it.
But wasn't that voluntary?
Yes. No, I'm not suggesting that they're exact parallels, but the parallels are striking. When you start building enough of these parallels, they become very significant. In other words, not exactly the same story. We've already established that he doesn't marry Mirav, not because Lavan, because Shaul switched them, but because he chose not to. There are differences, but the stories have enough parallel to become very significant for us.
You have two fathers-in-law who are not exactly lovely people.
Well, that's the other piece of it, is that by the end of the story, if you really take this parallel to the end, Yaakov and Rachel, parallel to Michal and David, actually has... We're only looking at the beginning of that discussion, because we're looking at it from the perspective of the father-in-law and his relationship to the son-in-law. When we start looking at this same parallel in this story, this Yaakov-Rachel, David Michal parallel is going to stay with us for a long time, because the relationship between Yaakov and Rachel also goes through its complexities in a trajectory that is not too dissimilar to the trajectory of David and Michal.
But one ends up with kids, the other one doesn't.
Fair, but again, the fact that there are differences doesn't necessarily take away from the parallel. And that's an important piece to observation. Then there's a textual parallel. The textual parallel is a very strange expression. It appears here in Pasuk Chavav, Ve'agidu avadav le'David v'tatorim e'ele v'yishar ha'davar b'enei David li'itchaten b'melech ve'lo malu ha'yamim. Ve'lo malu ha'yamim is a strange expression. The days didn't fill, meaning, or what does it mean? So, if you look at the very bottom of the Radak, on the bottom of the page, V'lo malu ha'yamim
says Radak means Hazman shenatan lo shiavilo mea olot lo igi hazman ad shekam balach ve'avilo matayim.
It didn't reach the stipulated time, the designated time. I mentioned this last week that it's unlikely that Shaul would have just said, bring me 100 olot plishtim, without giving some kind of time frame to this quote-unquote test. Because otherwise, 5 years in the course of various battles on the battlefield, so David will collect 100 olot and be done. He had to make it so that it would be an impossible task in his mind. So he probably said to him, I want 100 olot plishtim by the week's end. That kind of a stipulation. So v'lo malu ha'yamim, David didn't wait. He just jumped in and went to fight. But the phrase v'lo malu ha'yamim appears also in the context of Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. Because it says there, in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, after the 7 years, I'm now reading in the middle column, after the 7 years when Yaakov had worked for 7 years in order to marry Rachel, ended up getting Leah. Vayomer Yaakov el Lavan, havat ishti, ki mal'u yamai avoyela. I filled my days, meaning I've paid my dues, I've worked my 7 years. Now it's time for me to marry her. So the phrase ki mal'u yamai, which appears by Yaakov as a way of saying I fulfilled my commitment, is exactly the same phrase, and it's a rare phrase. It's exactly the same phrase used by David, or used by the Navi to describe how David fulfilled the commitment even earlier than stipulated. Not as by Yaakov, ki malu yamai, but velo malu ayamim. It didn't even get to that point where he had reached the stipulated, designated time. So there's a very powerful linguistic or textual parallel there as well. Moving forward, understanding the dynamic of the relationship, Yaakov's relationship with Lavan unfolds in not too dissimilar ways to the relationship between David and his father-in-law. In the end of Parshat Vayetze, by the time Yaakov is finished, 7 years for Rachel / Leah, 7 years for Rachel / Leah / Rachel, and then another 6 years for Yaakov, for his household. So after the end of 20 years, he's now reached the point where Lavan is trying to pull all kinds of shtick with him and change the conditions of his employment and do pull all kinds of things. So it says, Pasachav, Yignov Yaakov at Lev Lavan Harami al Bali Higidlo Kiborechu. He decided finally at the end of, well, there was a dream involved, etc., decides to flee. And Yaakov, because he understood that Lavan would never let him go, witness the fact that Lavan, when he comes after him, he says, the daughters are my daughters, the children are my children. Lavan looked at Yaakov like an Eved. This is just important to understand in terms of the dynamic of Parsha Vayetze. Lavan looked at Yaakov as an Eved. The law of an Eved is that that the master is entitled to give his daughters or to give a wife to an Eved. But the law of an Eved is, to whom do the children of the union of the Eved with the wife belong?
To
the master. The children of a slave belong to the master. So when Lavan took Yaakov in, Lavan took him in as an Eved, not as a son-in-law. And because he took him in as an Eved, he has no right to leave. He's enslaved there. And from Lavan's perspective, the daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, the grandchildren. They belong to me. You want to leave? Leave. You leave the family behind because you're an Eved. It's important to understand the dynamic of Parsha Vayetze, how Lavan has the audacity to say to Yaakov, the children are my children, the children are mine. What do you mean the children are yours? What kind of an audacious statement is that? If you look at it from the perspective of a master speaking to an Eved, the children are mine. So Yaakov, Vayignov Yaakov et lev Lavan Arami abli gidlo kiboreachu. Yaakov has to run away in the middle of the night. He's gonev lev, he steals his father-in-law's heart, meaning he doesn't tell him. He runs away in the middle of the night. Why? Because like a slave, enslaved in a house he needs to escape from, he has to run away.
Like David.
And David also had to run away in the middle of the night. David barech, v'imalet, v'evosh, mula ramata. David ran away, and he ran away dafka in the middle of the night.
But that's when you would think anyone would run
right.
away.
So there's this remarkable moment when they're both boreach from the households of their fathers-in-law for various reasons. Lavan wants to enslave him, Shaul wants to kill him. Fair. But it goes one step further. In that moment when he escapes, he can only escape if the wife, who is the daughter of the father-in-law, assists. Otherwise, there's no option. There's no possibility. If the wife's loyalty is to the father rather than to the husband, he can't escape. So in order to do so, Yaakov has to go to his wives, ask their permission, and not only do they give their permission, which is a fascinating conversation, take a look in Parshat Vayetze. I'm going to skip around a little bit, but take a look at the beginning of the parak. Lamed Aleph.
What page is that?
It's 35. Vayishma et divrei bnei Levan lemor. There's a piece of the story we never hear about, but it's there. Lavan has two daughters, but he also has sons. What are the sons? What are the names of the sons of Lavan? We have no idea. We're never told. Yaakov, Lavan has sons. Vayishma et divrei b'nei Levan lemor. Lakach Yaakov et kol asher la'avinu. And those sons are jealous. Those sons say that Yaakov stole his wealth from their father. Now, they have good reason to be fearful and concerned that Yaakov stole this wealth from their father. Because?
He's going to take all that stuff with him?
He did.
Well, he did, but why is it the brother's issue?
They'll get less inheritance.
Right. 100%. Because that belongs to them. In the end, if it's all about Yerusha, that belongs to them. So Yaakov has stolen their portion.
But that depends on how you look at him. He's an Eved or not an Eved.
Well, so this is exactly it. Vayar Yaakov et pnei Lavan v'yine inenu imok et Moshe shom. Yaakov saw that Lavan was no longer looking at him the same way. Okay, he was no longer giving him the father-in-law, son-in-law look. Now it was the master, the Adon Eved look. And Vayomer Hashem Yaakov shuv l'eretz avotecha l'moladatecha v'yeimach. God said to him, it's time for you to go home, and I will be with you. I will be with you, that same phrase that we have by David that we've talked about. So Yaakov calls his wives over. God says to him, go home. And Yaakov says, I need to consult with my wives. That's an interesting observation. Yeah, it makes for good marriage, but it's still interesting. Right? God says, go home. And Yaakov responds by consulting with his wives. Why is that? He says to them, God was with me, but your father-in-law is not looking at me the same way. And I God helped me and amassed all of this, but Pasuk Zion, Vavichen hetelbi vechlefet maskorti aseret monim, your father cheated me and he tried to change my terms of my employment 10 times. But God wouldn't let him. Then there's a whole conversation about how he changed those conditions, and there's this dream that he reports to them. I'm going to skip all of that and jump to Pasuk Yudalet. You see it? Vatan Rachel v'Leah v'Tamar nalo. Ha'od lanu chelek v'nachala b'vet avinu. You think we have a portion left in our father's house? Halo nachriot nechshavnu lo. He considers us like strangers. Ki mecharanu, he sold us. Now, that's a strange way of describing the father-in-law giving the daughter's hand in marriage to the son-in-law. But when you understand that the father's now looking at this relationship not as a son-in-law, but as an eved, and therefore to an eved you sell, right, you give a wife so that you may have children, and more avadim, ki mecharanu, vayocha gam achol kaspeinu, he's taken our food, ki kol ha'osher asher itzil elokim yavinu lanu hu levanenu, this wealth belongs to us and our children. Whatever God says to you, do. So he takes his family, he takes his possessions, he takes everything to go back to his father's Yitzchak's house. And Pasuk Yutet, Lavan halach l'gzozet tzono, Lavan went off to shear his sheep. Vatignov Rachel et atrafim asher la'avia. And Rachel, needing some kind of a ruse by which to, or mechanism by which to enable Yaakov to escape, steals his father's trefim. We'll come back to that trefim in a moment. Vaygnov Yaakov et lev Levan arami al belihi gidlo kiborechu. Yaakov runs away without telling his father. Vayivrachu v'chol ha'shelo v'yakom v'yavo et ha'nahar v'yasem et penav ha'gilat. In the meantime, when Yavan comes running after them to catch them, after he and he says to him, Pasuk Lamed, "Ata aloch alachta ki nichsof nichsafta levet avicha v'lama ganavta talahai." You ran away from me, Lavan. Yaakov, why did you run away from me? These are my children, and you didn't let me say goodbye. And on top of everything else, you stole my gods. The reason I left without saying goodbye is because I was afraid you would take my family, which is probably true. Whereas, as for taking your gods, I have nothing to do with that. Yaakov didn't know that Rachel had told him. He said, if somebody took your gods, they should die. So Yilavan goes searching through the house, literally goes searching through the tents one by one. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, v'Rachel lakchat atrafim v'tesimim v'kad agamah v'teshev aleihem v'yimashesh Lavan et kol ha'ohel v'lo matza. Rachel, in the meantime, had taken the trafim, put them into her camel, was sitting on top of them. Yilavan went into Rachel's tent, like all the other tents, went searching through, as if searching for stolen items from a gabancha ganavim. So she says to her father, "Vatomer Levi, Alicha bene Adoni, ki lo chalakum mipanecha, ki terech nashim li." He says, "Excuse me, my father, I can't get up." He looked, he couldn't find the trafim, and therefore he went home. Didn't actually go home yet. They make a brit between them, they make a pact between them, they make shalom between them. It's a shalom which basically says, here's the marker between your borders and my borders. You don't cross into this border, I won't cross into that border. You'll stay in your territory, I'll stay in my territory, and we'll have shalom between us. Typically we call that a ceasefire, not a peace agreement. But all right. That's the end of the story with Yaakov and Laban.
So is it the right thing to do to go tell your wives before you answer God?
He answered God. His answer to God was that he needed to consult with his wives. He needed to consult with his wives because without their help,
he couldn't do it.
He couldn't escape.
Therefore, he had to consult.
Right. He absolutely had to consult. They had to be willing also to come back to Eretz Yisrael, but that's a separate part of the story. So back to my chart for a moment. Third row from the end. In order to escape, Mrs. Son-in-Law, right, Yaakov on the one and David on the other, has to enable them to do so. So Rachel has to take the trefim and hide them, which was the psukim we just saw. And in David's case, we also read the psukim. In order to escape, what does David have to? What has to happen? Michal has to be able to buy him time. Michal knows that he's not going to be able to convince anybody long term that this trefim with a hare's net over them. This trefim with a hare's net is not going to convince anybody for long.
He's a yak.
Right? But it gives him enough, but it buys David enough time to escape. But tikach michal et ha'trafim. I'm now reading in the third column. Third to end row, third column. Vatikach michal et ha'trafim vatasim el amita, vatkviru ha'izim sama mirashotav, vatachas babaket, vayvo malachim, v'nei ha'trafim el amita, ukviru ha'izim mirashotav. She took the trafim, disguised it with a hairnet, and in so doing, bought the time necessary to enable David to escape. So in both cases, they required the wives' assistance to escape. And the irony is, and this is really one of the most powerful parallels, is that in both cases, the means by which she employs to help Yaakov / David escape is a mechanism that has something to do with trefim. And trefim are very rarely mentioned in Tanakh. They appear in a few different places, and we'll next week, Bezrat Hashem, we'll talk a little more about the Trefim. But the fact that she helps him by taking Trefim, and Rachel helps him by stealing his father's Trefim, whatever that means, we'll have to look at that. And that Michal uses Trefim to enable the disguise that allows Yaakov to, that allows David to escape, that itself textually rings bells and says there's a parallel. Okay, two stories, you enough build enough parallels, and suddenly the stories take on significant meaning.
How was what Rachel did helping them to escape?
Helping David? Oh, Rachel by yeah. Well, so why does she take the Trefim? Typically, there's a few different explanations to why she takes the Trefim.
I think what I learned is that she didn't want her father to have the idols or something.
Didn't want the father to have the idols for what purpose?
She didn't want him to have a Bodhisattva in the house or something, I don't know.
Not quite. That wouldn't quite work. So, Trefim are used for various reasons, but Trefim in Tanakh are parallel to the use of ksamim, meaning there's some sort of a soothsaying device, some sort of a device used for prediction of or sort of soothsaying and divining.
So they're oracles.
They're oracles of some kind, right. So she steals them ostensibly, and this is probably the context of it in Sefer Bereishit, to prevent Lavan from using them to discover that they had run away. Right? Which would be complicated. Most unfortunately said that they looked, that the Trefim had the kind of the tzura, they had the look of a doll or a person. And that's why they were sort of imitations of the idolatry of Baal. Idolatry of Baal is an idolatry, it's a fertility god, but Baal is also a husband. So they have a form of a person. How they were used, I have no idea, but it doesn't matter. But that's how Michal was able to use them to disguise the bed, because they had the kind of a physical form. If you threw the cover over it, the physical form of a person. So Rachel steals them in order to prevent Lavan from using them. Michal uses them in order to confuse the servants. Don't ask me what these Trefim, which are idol-related in some way, are doing in the household of Michal Bat Shaul. That's a fair question. Not going to answer it now. But it's a good question. All right, next row. After the whole conflict, after the meeting, after Yaakov and Lavan finally meet, after this chase, what happens between them? They make a peace treaty, correct? In which Yaakov says, Elohei Avraham, Elohei Nachor, Yishpatu Beineinu, Elohei Avihem, Beishavah Yaakov, Befachad Aviv Yitzchak. They make an oath. Yishpatu Beineinu, let God judge between us. You're on your side of the border, I'll stay on my side of the border. It's a funny little peace treaty. But they make an oath, and the phrase used to describe their oath is Elokei Avraham Elokei Nachor Yishpatu Beneinu. Why Elokei Nachor? Elokei Avraham Elokei Yitzchak, I get. Why Elokei Nachor? Right. Because he's talking to Lavan, so you needed a acceptable deity from both sides. Now, this is a piece of the story we haven't gotten to yet, but it's Shmuel Aleph Perek of Dalet. It's after after David is on the run, after finally David has the opportunity, as the war unfolds between them, David finds himself in a moment where Shaul is asleep in the field with his army, and David and his servants are there and have the opportunity to kill Shaul. And he doesn't. He refuses to do so, and even though Shaul is rodefoto, Shaul is trying to kill him, he will not let anybody harm Shaul. Shaul is the Mashiach Hashem, he's the anointed one of God. So at that point, there's a famous story where David is standing on the top of a hill, and he calls down to him, and he says, I could have killed you, and I didn't. This is to show you that I really have no harm against you, etc. And they make a peace treaty between them. Pasuk Tedvav, Perek of Dalet Pasuk Tedvav, Vaya Hashem L'dayan, V'shafat Beni Uvenecha, V'yera V'yera V'trivi V'yishpiteini Miyadecha. Let God judge between us. So again, you have these phrases that appear, that jump off the page, that are very parallel phrases. You had V'lom Alu Yamim, now you have V'shafat Beni Uvenecha, Yishpitu Beneinu. And all of this points to the circumstances surrounding these two stories that start in a way that kind of structures Yaakov, Lavan, Rachel relationship, Shaul, David, Michal relationship. The complexities, the struggle with the father-in-law, the cheating, the attempt to have to run away, the role of the wife in enabling that flight of her husband, with certain differences. Michal doesn't go with David. Rachel does go with David. Maybe if Michal had chosen to go with David, the story would have been different. Okay, notice she doesn't say to him, let's go. Rachel said to Yaakov, let's go. Michal, Bat Shaul, never says, let's go. All she says is, David, you better leave tonight because otherwise you're going to be killed. What happened to let's go? Complicated.
Well, her staying there allowed him more leeway to get away.
You don't necessarily know that. Could have been more helpful if she'd gone with him, possibly. Yeah, we don't know. But she doesn't. She's Michal Bat Shaul, and she wasn't going to go climbing down the ladder of the window of the house in order to escape in the middle of the night. It's not dignified. It's complicated. But that's what happens when you start placing biblical stories in parallel to each other, is suddenly they highlight some of the differences. And I think the biggest difference of all, unfortunately Adina has left early, but the biggest difference of all was something which Adina identified at the beginning of this year today. And that is the dynamic of the relationship between them.
He didn't love her.
By Yaakov, it states explicitly that Yaakov loved Rachel. Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel. From the very moment he sees her, cries for her, stipulates to Lavan, he is willing to work for her for 7 years. Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel vayomer, E'evadcha sheva shanim berachel bitcha ktana. Let me serve you for 7 years in order to marry Rachel, your daughter, your younger one, berachel bitcha ktana. I don't know if you're familiar with the expression, but there's a modern, it's actually a Yiddishism that has crept into modern Hebrew, but it comes from Yiddish. And if you want to stipulate the terms of a condition and you want to identify them, that they are very specific and there's no room for ambiguity, you say, berachel bitcha ktana. Meaning, Yaakov left no room for ambiguity. Rachel. There are lots of Rachels. I can pull a Rachel off the street. No, Bitcha, your daughter. I have two daughters. Haktana, the younger one. Right. No ambiguity. Yaakov knew who he was dealing with. But Yaakov loved her. Three times, or twice actually, it says that Michal loved David.
They don't mention him loving her.
It never once says that David loved Michal. But it's more complicated than that. Because the opportunity to say so, it's not like there was no opportunity to tell us that David loved Michal. The opportunity to tell us that David loved Michal is there in the text. And yet it doesn't say so. And what do I mean by that? So let's go back to Yishmuel Aleph Perek Yud Chet. I want to take a look at a series of psukim that focus on what David was thinking, what David was feeling. Remember that emotional investment, emotional feelings are rarely presented in Tanakh. This parak is an exception. It's constantly telling us what people are thinking. So Pasuk Chaf Bet. Back to Perek Yud Chet.
348.
ויצב שאול את עבדיו, דברו על דוד בלט, למו עיני חפץ בך המלך וכל עבדיו והאמוך. Your servants, my servants love you. It's interesting that from Shaul's perspective, the ahava is there, but the ahava is the ahava of the servants, the avadim. V'yata yitchaten b'malach. Why don't you marry the kings, or join the king in marriage? So v'yidavru avdei Shaul b'aznei David et advarim eile. V'yomer David, hakala b'enechem yitchaten b'malach. You think it's such an easy thing to become the king's son-in-law? What's driving David's thought at that moment? There's no dowry. The dowry is paid to the family, right? To the father. Meaning, what's he concerned about here? His focus is on litchaten b'melech. Litchaten b'melech means not to litchaten b'michal, Litchaten b'melech. Litchaten b'melech means to become the king's son-in-law, to marry into the family of the king. He'll say it again in Pasuk Chavav. After they come to him and they say to him, you know what, the condition is me'er orlot plishtim, 100 orlot plishtim. If this was Yaakov, actually, it could have just been Yaakov. If this was Yaakov, and the stipulation is articulated, and you really love her, then the response is, you accept the conditions because you loved her. In fact, that's exactly what it says by Yaakov. Don't have to bother changing the page. I'm just going to pull the quote out. It says by Yaakov, after he stipulated the terms of the condition. Listen to this pasuk. I should have put this on the page. If you want to put the reference, it's Perek Chav Tet, pasuk Chav. V'Yaakov, V'Ya'avod Yaakov B'Rachel Sheva Shanim. Yaakov, when he fulfilled the commitment, served Lavan for 7 years. He worked for Rachel, on behalf of Rachel. V'Yu Beinav Ki Yamim Achadim. They were like just a few days in his eyes. Why? Be'avatota, because he loved her. 7 days, 7 years is nothing when you have in your focus the end result, which is that you loved her. And then Vayomer Yaakov Levan, have et ishti kimal uyamai. I've done my commitment. Now let me marry my wife. In David's case, when he's finally convinced, Pasuk Chavav, Vayagidu avadav leDavid et advarim eile, David is told that the condition here is to kill 100 plishtim. Vayishar davar b'nei David, then he's very happy about it. That he can do. Why is it Vayishar b'nei David? Not because Vayahavet Michal, but it says Vayishar Adavar Benei David Lehitchaten Bamelach, to become the king's son-in-law. Velo Malu Ayamim, he didn't even wait. He ran out and he did it right away. Vayakom David Vayelach Pasuch of Zion Vayakom David Vayelach Huva Nashav Vayach Baplishtim Mataimish. He went and he took out 200 plishtim. Vayavei David Olotahem, brought their Olot. Vaymalum LaMelech, he paid the king Lehitchaten BaMelech. So three times I have the phrase that defines what Yaakov, what David was looking for into in achieving in this relationship. What David accomplished in this marriage was, he became the son-in-law of the king. What happened to becoming Michal's husband? And that night, when she enables his escape, she stays with Shaul, and she lets him go and flee. This is not a marriage that has promise. There's enormous complexities and issues from the very beginning. She loves him, and he loves the possibility of becoming the king's son-in-law.
And that might be harsh, but when you compare that in the back, against the backdrop of Yaakov and Rachel and their relationship, and the intensity between which that relationship is described, and the same challenges of a father-in-law who wants to enslave the son-in-law, or wants to kill the son-in-law, who wants to do him harm, who wants him to be out of the way, the same complexities led Yaakov to run away and Rachel to run with him. Those same complexities led David to run away and for to Michal Bat Shaul to take the trefim, but to remain with, to remain in the palace. And this is the beginning of the story. This is how the dynamic of David and Michal is one of the tragedies of Sefer Shmuel. We're going to see its complexity in various places in the Sefer, but I think it starts from the fact that their relationship doesn't start in a in a bi-directional, two-directional context. Each one of them is being driven by a very different emotion and a very different aspiration. All right.
So
we're going to...
You grew up reading about the old kings and queens of England. You don't
Say this again?
For those of us who were in our youth reading a lot of books about kings and queens of England...
Right.
Most of them really didn't really have very friendly relationships with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that is...
It doesn't seem that there's any reason to think that kings and queens can come after being better.
You would hope. You would hope.
I mean,
right?
You would hope, but it wasn't something that was a priority.
You would hope.